Joining us now to sing Hooray for Bollywood for the full hour in Detroit, Michigan, Shikha Dalmia, senior analyst with the Reason Foundation and writer for Reason Magazine. And here in studio, Rupinder Nagra, Hamilton-raised actor and star of the Bollywood film Amal. Lucky Sanda, former Bollywood child star, now a Mississauga-based Bollywood acting coach. Neeru Kumar, lawyer and blogger at MyBindi.com and a big Bollywood fan. And Tom Ernst, host and producer of TVO's own Saturday Night at the Movies. Great to have everybody around the table for this discussion, and also for our friend Ms. Dalmia in Detroit, Michigan. Lovely to have you all here. Lots of people watching this program right now, I suspect, may never have seen a Bollywood movie. And we're learning a lot about it because, of course, the IIFA has descended on our city. So, to all of those who are new to this thing, we're going to go around the literal and metaphorical table here to find out what is the allure of these films. Okay, Shikha, get us started. What's the allure?
Well, you know, the Bollywood has different allure for different people. It's only now becoming, you know, known for the phenom it is in India, here in the West. And the Toronto Film Festival is a perfect example of that. You know, the reason it's becoming now better known in the West than it has been is because the Indian diaspora has spread so much. In Canada, you know, there are about 1 million Indians, and in the United States, there are about 3 million Indians. And these people, you know, have always been in love with Bollywood. I mean, I'm one of them. I'm, you know, not an ardent fan, but I follow what's happening in Bollywood. And, you know, as in this great globalized world of ours, there is intermingling of cultures. The Indians here intermingle with, you know, the Native Americans and Native Canadians. And they, you know, impart a little bit of their culture to them. And so that's sort of what's going, or it's, at least it's a bit part of what's going on.
Okay. Rupinder, what would you say?
I would tend to agree with her. I think what's interesting now is that the Indian diaspora is so large, so everyone's exposed to it, and that's the reason for it. And the beauty of Bollywood or the Indian film industry is the escapism, the fact that people can get away from their everyday troubles and problems and escape to this world, and they want to go on the ride.
There really is no pretense in these movies about trying to reflect life.
No.
Accurately, is there?
No, and no, there isn't. And it's interesting, if you, people in India, they can see that when they leave their house. They can see their everyday problems. So they want to go to a cinema and be taken on a ride, a journey, getting away from it. They want to see good-looking people. They want to see the hero who will beat up 20 villains. They want to see the rickshawwala, who's the hero in the film, fall in love with the prettiest girl in the school, right? And that's what they want, and that's their love for it.
Okay, here's a bit of an out-there question then, Lucky. If they want to see the protagonist fall in love, how come there's never any hot sex scenes in these movies?
Well, because of the cultural backgrounds in India, the different religious sects and other people, right? There are Orthodox and, you know, modern Indians too, right? So just to keep everybody happy, because it's a diverse culture over there, like, you know, different, every 50 kilometers there's a different language and, you know, dialects and other stuff. There's so many languages, so many religions, so many subcastes, castes. So to keep everybody happy, you know, they just try to, like, avoid certain things. And over the years, we have seen that certain organizations have objected to certain things being used, or the name of the film is not justifiable to them or not acceptable to them. Hmm. So they have protests and whatnot.
Gotcha. And well, does this mean, Neeru, that Bollywood programs to the lowest common denominator pretty much all the time?
No, I would disagree with that. I think... for the most part, I think, you know, it's an industry that churns out something in the range of 800 to 1,000 movies a year. And so the vast majority of them are going to be following certain plot lines that are recombined, pardon me, and slapped with a new title and just pushed out into the market. So yes, to a large extent, I think it's going to be something that appeals to the common denominator. And their base really is, you know, the vast population that, as Rupinder said, are looking for escapism and looking to escape the difficult daily toil of their existence. But then every year you will see emanating from Bollywood also some better quality, if I can put it that way, films that will push the boundaries a little bit and will explore somewhat different themes. And we're seeing an evolution in Bollywood right now where different themes are being explored. And so I think the quality of the filmmaking is improving slowly in, as far as my personal tastes go.
Well, in fact, Tom, I think some of those, what you might call, I hate to use this word because it just sounds wrong, but more sophisticated or more complicated themes, they're being rewarded at the Bollywood Oscars this year.
Absolutely. I mean, what we've got is a transition, as you mentioned. But first of all, I can't think of any better Indian film than Sholay. And that may not be called sophisticated, but it's certainly everything Hollywood has ever tried for or has been.
You know what? But pause right there for a second, because you put that on our station, right, this past weekend?
I did, on the weekend, yes.
We've got a clip, just so everybody knows what you're talking about. You say it's a, you know, very famous movie. A lot of people won't have seen it, so let's do a little clip. Michael, if you would, roll tape. Sholay. Now, that goes on for about 15 minutes.
What's not sophisticated about that? I mean, that's Butch Cassidy. That's Butch Cassidy. Yeah. That's a Kurosawa film. That's Sergio Leone. I mean, it's all those influences in there. It's a well-crafted, brilliant movie. I mean, that's the action film. That's the kind of films you'll get out of Hollywood as well. And that plays to, as you said earlier, the common denominator. But there is a huge movement right now of a new type of Bollywood cinema. In fact, when we say Bollywood cinema, we're thinking of a genre, usually, particularly if you're North American. You think of a genre being what we just saw, the dances, the singing. Bollywood has changed considerably. The new Bollywood films, at least the ones that I have seen, don't have the songs and dance. They have the background music, but they're more seated in reality. Maybe they're still about glamorous, beautiful people, but so are North American films.
Well, let me ask about that scene in particular. Shekhar, let me go to you on that, because are those kinds of shoot 'em ups popular with women, female audiences?
I actually couldn't see the scene that you just showed, but, you know, yeah, to go back a little bit to your first question about, why we don't see sex and violence in Bollywood movies, actually that's not true. There is, India is a country that's struggling between tradition and modernity. And, so the traditional values and the modern values, sort of are clashing with each other right now. And Bollywood, to some extent, reflects that. So you do see, in fact, Bollywood pushing the boundaries of what's acceptable, you know, sexually acceptable in India and vice versa. So some of the, you know, the fantasy songs that you see in Bollywood, you know, they are every bit as, you know, erotic, if not as explicit as those that you see on MTV. Just last year, you know, the whole country was kind of having a civil war, based on these two songs that came out at the same time. One was Munni Badnaam Hui, and the other was Sheela Ki Jawani, in which extremely erotic dances with extremely erotic moves kind of just lit up the whole screen. And the country was kind of fighting about, well, who has the better moves and who's sexier? Is it Munni or is it Sheela?
Yeah,
and,
no, but Tom,
you know, but it's not
the
explicit the way it is in Hollywood.
They don't have the nudity, but they're going that direction. One of the films that is popular right now is Dev D, and there is a scene where a woman actually appears from behind naked. And that's a huge, I mean, that took me by surprise. And I think that's one of the huge steps they're making, correctly or incorrectly, I don't know. But even in their comedies, I Wake Up Sid was the other film we showed, where a single woman moves to Mumbai and invites a single man, I mean, to help him out, to live with her in this one-bedroom apartment. This is, this was unheard of.
Well, let's do, again, a little comparison and contrasting here, shall we? We're going to show two clips right now. One, how they used to do it. One, how they do it now. This is the song and dance stuff, okay? And you tell me whether or not this is getting racier. Let's see. Michael, roll tape, please. Okay, that's the older movie from about a decade and a half ago, and now let's bring it fully to the present.
वो हसीना वो नीलम परी कर गई कैसी जादूगरी नींद नाखों से छीन दी है दिल में बेचैनियां है भरी वो हसीना वो नीलम परी कर गई कैसी जादूगरी नींद नाखों से छीन दी है.
Niru, that's getting to Beyoncé territory there, isn't it?
It is. It is getting into Beyoncé territory, and I think what's happening, what we're seeing, is that Bollywood is now sort of, as we were talking about India transitioning, Bollywood is transitioning as well, and as the, you know, we've become more global and influences have crossed from west to east and east to west. And so what we're seeing is that I think the Indian film industry is recognizing the value and the magnitude of the interest and the dollars that the diaspora around the globe will bring to this. And I think they are trying to become somewhat more contemporary and appealing to audiences that are not just in India.
The star in both those movies is King Khan, right?
King Khan.
You think he's hot?
No.
You don't?
I mean, look, listen, everybody has their own tastes, and I'm sure he's a very attractive man to many people, and he is a great actor.
I mean, if you were going to ask
me my favorite actor, it would be Aamir Khan, just because of his versatility in terms of acting, because now he's moved into directing, and he's pushing the envelope and raising some interesting issues, and he's getting some leverage. But so if you're asking me my personal taste,
yes.
There you have it.
Okay.
But yeah, I know people who are big fans of Shah Rukh Khan, and I'm a big fan of his movies and his acting, not to take away anything from him.
Very good. Rupinder, you wanted to say?
Yeah, I just wanted to add in, I've always found what films from India, what they've always done, they've always reflected what was going on in Indian society. And if you look at the films from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and what's happening in India right now is there's this influx of cash. There's this money there. And you have the youth going out to clubs. They're constantly partying and doing these things. And you find the films are emulating that. And so you'll find a lot of the music and songs coming out of India are very MTV-ish because of the influx of satellite television. They're greatly influenced by that. And so Indian cinema will just show you what's going on in society. So I think that's anyone in India to see those songs that are coming out, they'll be like, yeah, yeah, that's cool.
Does that look too like racy for you, Lucky? What do you think? I mean, they're a little more scantily clad there in the second
piece. The thing is, as we were discussing earlier also, erotic scenes and all that, if you go back to Mr. Raj Kapoor's era, mm-hmm. Satyam Shivam Sundaram, that was one movie where it was like Zeenat Aman was very erotically exposed in a very nice and artistic way. It was a very artistically done, Mr. Devanand was one person, Mr. Raj Kapoor, they have shown a beauty of a woman in a very nice, discreet and subtle way, where today we look at it, we'll see that, okay, it's nudity. Hmm. But they took it in a very different level altogether.
Gotcha. Can I show some of your work here?
Well, you, I guess.
Be my guest, okay. Michael, you want to, here's Lucky. Here's Lucky Sanda from many years ago. Roll tape, please.
गुजारे दिन सारे देखो मुझे ऐसे तो रुलाओ ना रुलाओ ना
पापा
मिठुन
पापा
मिठुन तुमने पहचाना
हाँ पापा हाँ
पहचाना तुमने ओ बेटी
Lucky, do you recognize yourself from 35 years ago there?
Oh, yeah.
You're the little kid. That's quite adorable. Now, you are doing that scene with one of the megastars of your business, right?
Yes.
You want to tell us about him?
Well, that was my first movie with Mr. Amitabh Bachchan, Rekha, and one of the renowned directors, Mr. Dilwal Goha. And like, I was selected from a lot of other kids they were looking at, auditioning for, and selected me. And then like, I was flown to Calcutta. I stayed there. They were shooting in Calcutta, and I stayed there for a month, and not a single day of shooting. From there, we flew, because they were shooting, most of the movie was shot in Calcutta. We flew to Darjeeling, and next day morning, I've been dressed up and all that, and they're, okay, it's your first shot today. Well, I was a little bit nervous, but then I said, you know what? Just focus and do your job.
And how was he to work with?
Oh, he's such a thorough gentleman. He's so helpful. Like, whatever I'm passing on to my students now is because of Mr. Amitabh Bachchan.
Rupinder, is he a big idol for you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, growing up in Hamilton, the very first film I ever saw was an Amitabh Bachchan film. And I actually remember going to see this film in a cinema. So it's great now. I'm like, wow, memories. but Amitabh was the first film I saw. It was a film called Diwar. And I was introduced to the world of cinema. And I was quite shocked because these were people who I could recognize. And I remember my dad took me, and I thought there were real people telling their stories. I thought it was an uncle telling a story on the screen. And a couple of days later, I went back to see the same Amitabh film. And he became the person who kind of, you know, created this path for me to get into films.
Have I got this right, Neeru? Did he just spill the beans on something he wasn't supposed to spill the beans on? did he not say that his daughter-in-law, he's about to become a grandfather?
All right.
That's
he's
right,
the guy who did
he
it.
Did.
He tweeted that he's about to become a grandfather and therefore scooped his own son and daughter-in-law on the news?
Yeah. It is a bit of a patriarchal society, and you know, we talked earlier this week about the respect for elders, and that is something that's a fundamental Indian value. Now, I don't know what the inner dynamics between Aishwarya Rai, her husband Abhishek, and her father-in-law are, but I'm sure that they have a code of understanding amongst them that works.
that the grandfather just
that
broke.
That he can tweet, yeah. And he's a very proud grandfather to be.
Okay. I'm going to read something that Shikha wrote in, Shikha, you wrote this a long time ago in Reason Magazine, but I'm going to quote you anyway here. Can Western pop culture do the trick against radical Islam? That was a question you asked. Unlikely, you wrote, American culture, despite its alleged ubiquity, doesn't have the same transformative power in Eastern countries that don't share the West's ethnic, religious, and cultural background. MTV and Hollywood are certainly watched in the Arab world, but their appeal is more voyeuristic than aspirational. It stems from a curiosity about how exotic people in alien countries live, not out of any inclination to live like them, but Bollywood's allure, rooted in a shared heritage, values, and issues, is different. And India's recent economic success makes its pop culture even more compelling. I want to know, just follow up on that, Shikha, if you think that Bollywood can reach out to Muslims in a way that Hollywood cannot.
Yes, I mean, that piece was exploring the soft power of Bollywood compared to, in fighting Islamic radicalism, compared to, you know, the hard power that the United States has been relying on. And the point I was making in that piece was that, pop culture is an extremely influential and important phenomenon. The Soviet Union, to some extent, was brought down, you know, less by American guns and, missiles, and really more by the Beatles and rock and roll. They were hugely influential in bringing about the reforms and exposing an entire generation of Soviet youth to what the West really looked like. So this, and Bollywood, my contention, is doing the same for the Muslim world right now, which is providing a glimpse of, you know, the possibilities that would be available to them under in a different, freer political system. And so when the Muslim world, which has this which has a lot of shared values and heritage with India, you know, they are both traditional societies, they started from economically from a very similar, you know, background. When they see India making economic strides and they see the fruits of those economic strides, you know, being presented to the, you know, through Bollywood, you know, the fun that people are having, the wonderful cinema that they are both producing and enjoying, it sort of changes them. It changes them in many, many ways. So, you know, I gave several examples in that piece, but, you know, at the simplest level, When you see, when Muslim women see, you know, Bollywood stars wearing all these beautifully crafted costumes, and some of them very racy and some of them not, you know, it's very hard for them to see all that and then go back and submit to, you know, Muslim clerics who want to shroud them in a burqa. So you can't sort of, you know, look at a culture and enjoy all everything that it has to offer without at some level also accepting some of its values. And so that, I think, you know, so that Bollywood has a certain transformative power, cultural transformative power, I don't think that people have fully yet, you know, figured out and studied and analyzed.
Neeru, do you share that?
I was going to take it from a slightly different perspective and say that taking a look at the impact that Bollywood has had, a lot of times it's very easy to just criticize Bollywood for being fluffy and for not being a serious art form. And many of the movies may, in fact, you know, feed that opinion. But speaking from the perspective of somebody who's grown up here, I wanted to address the impact of Bollywood for the diaspora communities. So speaking about parents, people from my parents' generation who immigrated to these various lands around the world, for them, at the time that they left, they had very little immediate connection in terms of the ability to connect back to their homeland and to their native culture. It was very difficult. But then with the advent of technology and VHS tapes becoming available, Indians went in en masse to get VHS tapes and to rent Bollywood films, and it became an immediate form of connectivity to their culture and to the things that they hold dear, to the values that were reflected. And then so we were raised watching family, watching Hindi movies and in family groups and with our community at large. And then it had a secondary impact on the youth that have grown up here who did watch these Hindi films, in the sense that rather than go to a classroom setting, and some of us still studied Hindi in classes, but for those of us who enjoyed Hindi films, we were able to learn Hindi sort of by osmosis, just by sitting down and watching and asking our parents, what does that mean, what does that mean? And it gave us an appreciation for aspects of the culture that we didn't necessarily see on a regular basis because we were being raised in this society. So we were able to you know, find a different level of appreciation and intimacy with our culture.
Tom, what about you on that?
Well, lessons are learned from listening well, and it's interesting because I did have a very firm opinion on this subject, which is Bollywood cinema may have an effect, but its initial effect was from Hollywood and other cinema. I mean, it's sort of it's channeling what we consider the traditional storytelling, North American storytelling, and putting it encapsulated in its film, including its culture and its ethics and everything else in there. But, you know, if it's true, what Shika is saying, that it's going to have an effect on other cultures, it's only because, I think, that it's the people that they recognize the values being translated in people that they recognize. So these values are actually, and I'm saying this very cautiously, coming from a storytelling that may have had its roots in, as I say, Sergio Leone, Kurosawa, other films, and even maybe John Ford. And that's being translated, becoming more recognizable, and then becoming more accessible. And as we progress, and you see these transitions, then you can recognize yourself or whoever in these pictures and then accept perhaps a broader sort of value system.
Rupinder?
Yeah, I think all great strong points. I think one thing that's interesting to mention is right now the three biggest stars in India are Muslim, right? Hmm. So the biggest stars, so Salman Khan, who's given the biggest hits in the last year, you have Shah Rukh Khan, and you have Amir Khan. And before, in the 50s or 60s, anyone who was Muslim, they would change their name to more of a Hindu name because they weren't that accepted. So I agree with Shekha that, you know, there is a way that perhaps now, through Indian films, and I never even thought about this point until now, that you can reach out to these other communities. I know for me, seeing Indian films, as you had mentioned, was a way to kind of, the only reason I was brought to a film because my parents wanted me to keep in touch with my Indian culture. Little did they know it would lead down a whole other path, but which is a whole topic of discussion, but yeah, it is a way to kind of bridge boundaries and bring people together in an interesting way.
Let me follow up with well, let's just tell it like it is. It's a bit of an uncomfortable question here. It seems to me, in the Bollywood movies I've seen, that the most prized, beautiful stars are of a lighter complexion as opposed to a darker complexion. Am I reading something wrong into things here?
No, you are right, and it is a big thing in India. If you go in India, they actually sell products for skin lightening. There's this fascination of the lighter skin. And the prettiest people are considered to be of lighter skin. And even Shah Rukh Khan actually is selling skin lightening products. I don't even know how to even kind of go down that path, but it is.
Well, lucky is this a little.
I slightly disagree to you. Right. As he mentioned that in the 50s and 60s, people used to change a name to a Hindu name, but then people like Mr. Muhammad Rafi, they never changed their names. Mm. It was not a compulsion because in the late, you know, last 5-10 years, there's been those problems with the Hindus and Muslims and all that. But before that, I grew up in Mumbai, and it was a very peaceful atmosphere, whether you have Eid or you have Diwali. Mm-hmm. I have Muslim friends coming over to my place and having sweets, prasad, at Diwali.
What about skin color, though, Lucky?
Skin color, I'll come to that. If you look back in the cinema, they're selling the products because the companies are using them as a brand ambassador to sell the products, and they're getting paid for it. Nothing wrong with it, right? I'll come to why they do that. Smita Patil, Rekha Ji, they're all dark-skinned. Mm-hmm. And those are the top-known actresses of our time.
So you're saying it's not the case that
it's the audience
not favors
the case anymore. People from the South, they're all dark-skinned, right?
Okay, Neeru, take over on that.
I have a slightly different take than Lucky as well. I think what's considered beautiful changes over time, what's considered attractive. So if you looked at Indian cinema some 50 or 30 years ago, you would see a very different style of beauty in the form of women. You would see more full-figured, hourglass-type women. You would see darker-skinned women. You would have their hair, they would have dark, beautiful hair pulled back in buns. And that was considered beautiful at the time. But times have changed, and we are having cross-cultural influences from, as I mentioned before, the East and the West. And there's so many different pressures that come to bear on the way that they market their product. And of course, they're seeking to market the Bollywood brand outside of their borders as well. So I think what they're doing is being responsive to the kind of beauty definitions that we have here in North America. And I think what you're seeing now is similar figure types and similar skin tones and hair styled in similar ways and that kind of thing. And I think what it's doing is making Bollywood more accessible to the West. And so that I think what's happening, really, my impression is that suddenly, because of the export of the Bollywood brand, among other things that are being exported from India in terms of culture, I think what you're seeing is a different appreciation in the West of India and Indian culture, and I think it's making it more accessible and appealing. So it's different enough to be exotic, but not different enough to be
Shikha, come on in, Shikha, because, please, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, the question of skin, the relationship of Indians and skin color is a very complicated and interesting question. And, you know, Bollywood reflects that in the faces that it chooses to highlight. I mean, on one hand, I think everybody on the panel will agree that, you know, Indians have imbued this aesthetic of, you know, light-skinned being more attractive because part of the colonial legacy. I mean, Indians internalized the idea, you know, that the people who were ruling us, and because the rulers are generally superior and everything about them, you know, was better than us. So I think part of India's allure with light skin and fairer skin comes from that. But partly there's another reason too, which is that the exotic is always sort of more interesting. And, you know, in India, given that India is a, you know, country with a lot of brown-skinned people, white is the, you know, the white skin color is the rarer skin color, and it's more exotic. And so part of the allure comes from that. But there is no question that, I was traveling with my husband in South India, actually, a year and a half ago, and he, you know, he's a New York Jew, and he was struck by the fact that in South Indian cinema, the faces of the women are not just light-skinned, but very Caucasian. I mean, they look so different from the women that you see on the street. And there are so many different reasons for it. I mean, one is clearly, you know, this Indian, you know, Indian allure of the white skin and the Caucasian looks. But on the other hand, you know, now you have another factor playing in because, with globalization and MTV and Hollywood pervading, you know, Indian sensibility to an even greater degree, you know, to some extent that aesthetic is becoming more predominant. At the same time that you have Indians coming into their own and accepting who they are. So there is also a renewed veneration of the dark-skinned, dusky beauty, which you didn't have before. So all of this is sort of being parsed out in the culture, and it's being reflected in Bollywood right now. So there are no easy answers to, you know,
that's fair enough. But the sense is, and Neeru, let me get you to follow up, then I want to hear from Tom on this as well. The suggestion sounds like if you want Bollywood to be more generally acceptable around the world, you got to whiten it up a bit because North American audiences basically are going to be less accepting of darker skinned women.
No, I don't think that it's the color of the skin that will make Bollywood more or less acceptable, but I do think that there is a certain amount of emulation going on in Bollywood so that it is made to be exotic. Different enough that it is exotic, but not so different that people are threatened by it or think it's so foreign. So enough similarities are created so that you can in fact export this. And what we're seeing here in Toronto right now in anticipation of IFA is these flash mobs that are taking place. And I look in the crowd of the dancers, and they're mostly from the mainstream culture. They're mostly non-Indian. And I think that the popularity of Bollywood, it's multifactorial. It's not just the fact that they're using people that can be related to, but I think it's, you know, the exoticism of the song and dance and the enchantment with musicals and
the lighter skin.
I mean,
you said it, not me.
But anyway, there are
all right, Tom, come on.
You know, I came to Bollywood cinema in with the 70s, films of the 70s, Dawn and Chalet and other films like that. One thing I did notice, if we're talking skin color, is the bad guys, the henchmen.
Are all what?
Are all white. And
white.
And they're all named Tom. And it's become, if you watch any, they're named Tom. And I've seen several, and I went, isn't that unusual? I've been to India a few times, and I'd hoped that I'd be discovered. I just want to be a henchman in a Bollywood film. I kid you not.
You got the right skin color and the right name for it.
Absolutely. I don't even have to change my name.
Well, I had a different observation, actually. I remember films in which the villains were actually darker emphasized with white suits very often. But they were,
henchmen were white. I mean, the main villain was darker skinned. Their henchmen were white.
Huh. I mean, you raise an interesting point. I mean, it's controversial and it's something worth exploring, but I don't know, it's a chicken and the egg thing, I think.
Okay.
I mean, which
All right.
came
well,
first?
Let me get to the bigger question here, which, and I think there's a lot of focus on this, Rupinder, in this weekend in particular, as, I guess 55,000 people are going to fill the Sky Dome.
Right.
Or Rogers Center, whatever they call it now. Sky Dome. It's always going to be the Sky Dome for me.
Right.
To go to this thing. Has Bollywood caught up to Hollywood in terms of film hegemony in the world?
You know, I find it really interesting that there's this fascination right now. Is Bollywood catching up with Hollywood? Or that term Bollywood is in a whole other discussion. But Indian film industry has always been there. It's just that the West right now is recognizing it. I mean, it started in the 50s. It was popular in the Soviet Union time. It was popular in the Middle East. Like, the popularity was always there. And I think it's just now where in the West they're starting to acknowledge Indian films. More what we call Bollywood, which is the song and dance films. But what's interesting is I really think the Indian film industry doesn't care. Like, in terms of doesn't care from the perspective of they've always been successful. They've always been there. They're making their money. They don't need the acknowledgement. Of course, it's great that they're getting, you know, this financial dollars coming in from the diaspora outside of India. But I find right now, I just this hoopla about, wow, what is this? It's you
well,
know.
Well, let me push a bit on this.
Sure.
Because America, America is America in part because almost anywhere you go in this world, you will see American culture.
Right.
And it's culture writ large. It's not just movies and magazines and TV shows. It's also McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicken and all that.
Right.
India is taking its place as one of the great nations of the world and will do so over this next century.
Sure.
Isn't that part of being one of the world's great nations, exporting your culture so everyone knows who you are? Yeah, let me hear Rupinder Shikha, and then we'll get you.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with that. And in terms of it is part of exporting your culture and taking it to other countries or other industries, but also that's always been there. Like, I think that export has already happened, right? Okay. But it's just that
we're waking up to it now,
right? And so as when we look at the music videos, like the songs, where everyone's fascinated with, wow, they're not wearing a lot, or the music, it sounds very modern. Well, India's been moving ahead with the times. It's constantly been moving ahead, and it's just that now
we're just waking up to it.
We're just waking up to it, and it's great that we're waking up to
it. Okay, Shikha, your turn.
I was actually going to add to what Upinder said, and you know, you asked, is Bollywood now, you know, taking over Hollywood? And you know, to some extent, it is. I mean, there are more people in the world who watch Bollywood in sheer numbers than there are in, you know, Hollywood. I mean, Bollywood is watched by about 3 billion people, and I think Hollywood is, you know, 2.5 billion. That said, I think there is something that's going to limit Bollywood's reach in the world, which is that it is essentially, you know, appeals to a Hindi-speaking audience, whereas Hollywood movies are made in English, which has, you know, much, much bigger global
appeal. Mind you, Shikha, can I just come in on that for a second, Shikha? Because I watched Om Shanti Om last night, and the movie goes back and forth between Hindi and English all the time.
Right, and that's happening more and more in, you know, in Bollywood movies. I mean, the Sheila song that I mentioned earlier, you know, half of the lyrics are in English. But, you know, but still, it's a, you know, the majority of the movie, Bollywood movies, are in Hindi, and they're always going to be in Hindi, and I completely agree with Upinder. Bollywood doesn't care what the West really thinks about it in, you know, in many ways. Amir Khan, you know, made a remark last year, I think, which was that every time a Bollywood movie wins an award in Toronto or at the Cannes Film Festival, it signals to audiences at home that they shouldn't watch this movie. And the reason is that the Indian taste, you know, and I think he was really onto something. And, you know, the reason is that, you know, the taste and the issues of the people who watch Bollywood movies is so different from those that watch Hollywood movies that Bollywood will eventually has to pick whom it's going to be true to. And Bollywood has this great emotional connection with its audiences that I don't think, I mean, for Hollywood, which I, you know, which I enjoy and love, for all its allure, Hollywood, you know, is much too sophisticated. You know, it is into exploring the craft of filmmaking. Mm-hmm. That's not what Bollywood is about. Bollywood is about, you know, human drama and families and what have you.
Understood.
And
okay, let me get Tom Ernst on this.
The issues of the audiences.
Maybe as Shikha says, Bollywood doesn't care who's number one, but I guarantee you, Hollywood definitely cares who's number one, and they want to stay number one, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, they're keeping an eye on whatever is popular and whatever the audience is and who's coming out to the films, etc. So when you say something like, if it wins at Cannes or in Toronto, then that's a movie to stay away from, you could pretty much say that about a Hollywood film, too. If it's somehow too sophisticated, it's considered elitist. And that's true with Hollywood audience as well. Some of the Tree of Life right now that's out right now is going to, you know, isolate many people. They're just not going to want to see it because it doesn't have, you know, the big love stories, the action, and everything.
Too many awards.
And too many awards. And you know what? We're talking about Bollywood and India cinema, but I've always thought of Bollywood as a genre. Whether it's acceptable to call it a genre or not, but we're not thinking of the Sachin Ray films. We're not thinking of A Wednesday. We're not thinking of Amal, which is a splendid, beautiful movie. We're not thinking of Deepa Mehta. You know, I mean, these are films that are coming out of India that are beautiful and wonderful, that don't appeal to the masses. And
let me do a clip of Amal.
Okay.
We got the star of it right here. We should play a clip of it. Can I do that?
Why not?
All right. Here we go. Michael, if you would. You want to say it? The director's name's Michael Smith. You want to look in the camera and tell him?
Michael, roll the clip of Amal.
Nicely done.
Kis tarah ke rickshaw wale hain,
sir? Sare rickshaw wale ek jaise nahi hote.
Ye kisne sikhaya tumko?
पिताजी।
बेवकूफ हो तुम, बेवकूफ। भूखे मरोगे। ये रख लो, काफी होगा।
सर,
रखो ना, 3 रुपए रखो, रखो ना।
सर, आपने 37 कहा था।
तो बख्शीश समझ के रख लो।
नहीं सर, थैंक यू सर।
Now that's not your typical Bollywood film. No. Did you think it? But is that a Bollywood film?
No, it's not. It's funny enough, and people will be surprised to hear this, it's a Canadian film. It's 100% Canadian funded, but all shot in Delhi.
And spoken in
Hindi. There are some characters in that film that do speak English. It kind of just shows the India of today. But yeah, once again, that's a film that will appeal to certain audiences. But we've always had this discussion about Amal, which is, if you were to show this film theatrically in India, we really feel a lot of people would say, yeah, so what? I mean, I can leave.
Wouldn't
my...
get an audience.
It would get a certain audience, but not let's say not the masses, because here's an interesting story. While we were shooting in Delhi, anytime you shoot a movie anywhere in India, and the actor in that film is Nasiruddin Shah, who was acting with me, very popular. We had crowds of 2,000 people just surrounding us. And
watching
us film, and then they started asking, who's the hero of the film? Who's the hero? And they pointed to me, and they're like, but he's a rickshawala. How can he be the hero of the film? And they were really confused. So it speaks to kind of the type of films they want to see. And this film, funny enough, would probably be considered high art for Indian cinema, right?
What was the criticism like of the film?
They quite respected it. What they felt was that the film really showed India in a good light, and really talked about kind of karma and dharma and what a lot of Indians grow up with. But a lot of them also just felt, we already know this, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just going to say, I agree with Rupinder very much, because this is, in my view as well, one of those movies that's just approaching filmmaking slightly differently, breaking away from the norm of those plot lines that I grew up watching. And I think it is high art, because it doesn't have the same crazy dance, song and dance numbers, which I love, but it doesn't have those. It had, you know, classical style music, and it had an unexpected ending.
Is there an audience for that kind of picture?
There is, because there are other films that have been produced in Bollywood that are like that. And I think of films like Sur Sangam, which is, again, a classical theme, a little bit more serious. Umrao Jaan. But Umrao Jaan had critical success, but a number of other films of that type that are considered more of a higher art form, rather than Nache Mayuri, a particular favorite in my family, movies that are really, really well done, that will appeal to a certain crowd of people that are looking for different kinds of stories to be explored, and not necessarily the same standard kind of Sholay clip that you showed with the fight scenes and the one hero with 20 villains vanquishing, you know, and rising above and that kind of thing. So I think that there is a market for it. I'm in that market.
If there is one movie, the lucky, stand by 1 second, yeah. Shikha. If there is one Indian movie, so-called, that North American audiences would have known about coming into this weekend, it's probably Slumdog Millionaire,
yes.
Which is, some people would say, not really an Indian movie. It's really a British movie.
Well,
does that rub you the wrong way?
Yes, it kind of does. And to come to her, what she was, to continue from there, there are movies like Peepli Live. There are movies like Three Idiots. Mm-hmm. There is a movie which most of people haven't watched, Faltu, which highlights Tare Zameen Pe. Those are movies which should be nominated for Oscars. Mm-hmm. Faltu, for one movie, it shows that in India, the pressure, because of the high level of competition, the pressure of getting admissions after your grade 10 is so high that if you get a 35, just a passing mark, you're not getting anywhere. You have to get a 70, 80 plus. That movie has not a big star cast, Arshad Warsi and Ritesh Deshmukh, but that was an excellent movie to watch, because it highlights the problems. If you're in the 35 to 70 zone, you're not getting admission in any college or university.
Shikha, you wanted to say?
Yeah, I was going to just add to the discussion and just note, you know, there's Bollywood, which is your standard, what we call masala movies, formula movies, which have, you know, which must have your obligatory 6 or 7 dances, a rape scene, you know, few violent scenes and, you know, stunts and what have you. And that's always dominated Bollywood. But right from the inception of Bollywood, there has been a very healthy, you know, low-budget, independent industry as well. You know, I grew up watching, for instance, Shyam Benegal's movie. I mean, Shyam Benegal, you know, he's a you know, leftist communist director whose politics I disagree with, but his cinema I've always loved. I mean, one of his first movies was Ankur, which gave Shabana Azmi, you know, a big break. And these movies, Shyam Benegal has launched so many Bollywood actors. So Naseeruddin Shah, you know, who you saw in the last clip, he was launched by Shyam Benegal. Smita Patil was launched by Shyam Benegal. Shabana Azmi. So, you know, the you know, just as there's Broadway and then there is, you know, there are the little playhouses that are sort of, you know, off Broadway. The same thing can be said about Bollywood, but I don't think, you know, these indie movies which deal with themes rather than human drama will ever become dominant in Bollywood because of the first point you made, which is that they are too naturalistic. They deal too much with reality, and what Indian audience is looking for are really fantasy and escape.
Yeah.
So, you know, they'll always have a presence, but they'll never be, you know, big players.
I wanted to pick up on your earlier comment about Slumdog Millionaire.
Yes.
And I think Indians might have a bit of a love-hate relationship with films like that. Because, for instance, I think in the history of nomination movies that were nominated to the Oscars in the foreign language film category, there were three Indian films that were accepted. Mother India in 1957, Salaam Bombay in 1988, and then in 2001, Lagan. And none of them won. And I think when Slumdog won, it was that bittersweet kind of tug of war within Indians to say, well, it's wonderful, we feel so proud because there's an Indian subject matter, and, you know, the actors are Indian, it's set in India, so it feels in essence Indian, and the world is celebrating that and acknowledging that. But it was not made by an Indian director.
Mm-hmm.
It was
exactly.
Not funded by Indians. It was not a Bollywood film. And why, and I think a lot of people question this, why did it take a movie made by Danny Boyle to actually achieve an Oscar nod and award as opposed to an Indian director? And there have been some absolutely, to pick up on Lucky's point, phenomenal films that are deserving of being seriously considered.
But I guess, Tom, they'd be saying what it says about Hollywood is all bad.
Well, but first of all, Pee Pee Live is a great film, and we're hoping to show that someday on this station. But just following up that, the answer, if I may be so straightforward, is clear. It won an award because it was a crossover film. So it had an appeal, not just to an Indian audience, but it had a wider appeal. By the way, I thought Lagan did win, but, you know...
I will
bow down to your knowledge on that. But Lagan is also an excellent, excellent film, and you know, I think it's getting the attention.
Can I just interject and ask why a crossover film has to be the genre that wins in a category that is clearly foreign language film? Because I don't think other films that do win, you know, whether it's Japan or whether it's other submissions that actually do win, I don't know that they're necessarily winning because they're crossover films. So
let's remember, Slumdog Millionaire won the best picture,
yeah.
Not best
film.
Foreign film.
Yes,
yeah.
you're in
best
fact
picture.
Correct. You're
yeah.
Right.
And I think Lagan did win best foreign. But we'll check on that. But
you may have to bow down to her again.
I may.
How am I doing on time here? 2 minutes. Okay. One more thing. We got 2 minutes left. Let me put one more thing, one question. All right. Let's do this. Deepa Mehta. Okay. Wonderful Indo-Canadian filmmaker. Seems to have a bit of a love-hate with Bollywood here. All of the hoopla surrounding the IFA Awards, she says, has more to do with, I guess, rewarding kitsch than culture. Fair point, Tom?
That's going to make her very popular, isn't it, this weekend?
No, it's not.
No, it's not. no, I don't think that's true. I think that there's a lot to be celebrated this weekend. There's a lot to be celebrated in India cinema. I actually don't like to use the term Bollywood, not because I'm, you know, it's just that I've never thought that was a factual term. I think we're dealing with Indian cinema of all varying kinds. And okay.
Rupinder, you tell me what you think about that. Deepa made a comment.
I think, you know, it's that it's her opinion on kind of art. Everyone has an opinion on cinema and art. Some people like certain things. I think what's going to happen this weekend here in Toronto is going to be beautiful. It has become part of Indian culture, and our culture is about song and dance, and that's what we're going to be celebrating this weekend.
You're going?
I shall be there at a number of events, yes.
Lucky, you're going?
Well, I'm doing a workshop in Mississauga on Sunday for IFA. Acting workshop.
Okay.
So I don't know whether I'll make it for the evening show or not.
I'm not.
You're not going?
My family's coming into town, so we're actually getting the broadcast and watching it all together.
Okay, gotcha. You're going?
Jeez, I wasn't sure you were going to ask me. No, I can't make it.
This is shocking.
I'll be watching on television.
Okay. Rupinder, come back next week and give us a full report.
All right, sure.
Can I thank all of our guests for appearing on the program tonight? Shikha Dalmia from the Reason Foundation and Reason Magazine in Detroit. Rupinder Nagra, the actor. The Hamiltonian, I like that, and star of them all. And there's Neeru Kumar, the logger and lawyer and blogger at mybindi.com. Lucky Sanda, the Bollywood acting coach and former child star. Tom Ernst, Snam, Saturday Night at the Movies. There he is on the other side of the table, looking elegant in green. You look ready for one of those Bollywood movies right now.